Welcome to another great episode of West Coast Bias. This is Jamal Artis. I'm your host. And of course, usually I'm together with my producer and co-host Jake. But as you guys know, I moved to Arizona, and so we've been getting some solo podcasts. I promise you guys some great analysis as we ramp up to this great month where it seems like every day there's a reason to talk about sports. And of course, on West Coast Bias, we talk about LA sports, mostly the Dodgers and the Lakers. And you know, occasionally, Jake, we talk hockey and LA Kings. But West Coast Bias is part of the What's Brewing Network, one of the many great shows on the What's Brewing Network. You have What's Brewing Symposium, where the guys talk about UCLA sports, along with wonderful drinks that Jake usually makes us. There is the B Team that occasionally drops in to talk UCLA sports as well. And of course, there's the Bare Minimum, where Jake and his daughter Megan talk about her time at my alma mater, the University of California, Berkeley. Well, I promised as the month turned to March that there would be some more than, what was it, every 4 months podcast. As things ramp up, it's NHL playoff time, it's NBA playoff time, baseball season has started. We're getting close to, we're a week away from the NFL draft. So there's a lot of things to talk about. I'm going to be filling you guys in on those things, especially when it comes to LA sports. So let's do what I'm calling Arizona Musings. Big news story for Arizona was they lost their professional hockey team last week. In a matter of a week, the Arizona Coyotes announced, or the rumor was that they were moving to Utah. Players were told that they were moving to Utah. And if you don't know the story, Arizona Coyotes lost their right to play in Glendale, Arizona, and the arena that they had been playing at since the mid-2000s due to a dispute between the city and ownership in terms of paying back taxes at being renters, basically, or leasers of the stadium. And so these last 2 years, they've had to play at the Arizona State University on-campus arena, Mullet Arena, that, you know, they went from a place where they can seat 20,000 people to only 5,000 people. They became the second most expensive ticket in the NHL, right behind the New York Rangers. They had enthusiastic crowds, but in the meanwhile, the team was trying to find some situation where they could stay in Arizona. But for whatever reason, they never came to a guaranteed arena agreement. And so the owner, who is a billionaire and frankly a moron, you know, got assurances from the NHL that if he sold the team, that he would retain the Arizona Coyote name rights, likenesses, things like that, for future use if an arena gets built. So he agreed to that, got sold to an investor group from Utah, and they had their last game. The Coyotes aren't in the postseason for like the umpteenth year in a row, I believe. And so so they are going to be moving to Utah next year. It kind of sad. I'm not, I've seen the Kings play in Arizona. There wasn't much of a rivalry, but as a season ticket holder for the Kings for 5 years, I got to see plenty of games, and there were raucous games. There were fun games. You know, Kings fans, the ones that wanted to go on a road trip, it was a perfect road trip to do. I've done it, and I got to see the Kings play in Arizona. It was a fine stadium, certainly newer than where the Kings played. Good location, has a sort of little mini kind of like LA Live situation there. It's next to the Glendale Football Stadium where the Cardinals play. So it was a good situation, but for whatever reason, it just never worked in terms of what ownership and the NHL wanted. They were never really willing, NHL was never really willing to lose out on making hockey work in Arizona, but obviously they finally decided that better to just go to Utah, which does have some diehards for whatever reason. I believe there's already 13,000 season tickets sold for this new team, whatever their iteration is going to be named. And with another 6,000 perhaps on a wait list or something like that. So looks like, and also just remember, these the other owners are greedy, so they get this. It's not a expansion fee, but a relocation fee. So they'll all get money. So, that's why they voted unanimously to allow this to happen. What that means for professional hockey in Arizona, and actually professional hockey here in Tucson, where I live, the Arizona Coyotes minor league team with the Tucson Roadrunners, part of the AHL, the minor league tier right below the NHL. Now there's talks of moving them up to Phoenix, meaning Tucson would lose another minor league team. So there wouldn't be any real professional at that level playing, even though they've been pretty big supporters, my understanding, of the Tucson Roadrunners here in Tucson. They are popular amongst the fans. They've been a successful team. They've made the AHL playoffs quite a few times when they've been here. So there's some talk now that because the owner of the Coyotes, or former owner now, retains the Roadrunners as a franchise because he owned them as well. There's talk of him moving them up to Phoenix to play in the same Arizona State arena, which makes sense because it's more of a minor league arena, only 5,000 seat. But then, remain an affiliate of the Coyotes. In terms of them being in Utah, remaining an affiliate of having that partnership, which would make sense, but it's a bummer for Tucson. And then, if the owner was to get a new franchise, in terms of Arizona, getting a new franchise and keeping the Coyote name and all that stuff, then I don't know if the minor league team would move back to Tucson, but it would be a kind of a bummer. When I decided to move my family here, people were asking, "What are you getting about sports?" And I was talking about, yeah, they have the Roadrunners are in minor league hockey is fun and it's a good atmosphere. And I've been to the arena to watch Arizona Wildcat hockey, and it would suck for Tucson to lose a minor league team that's very popular here because of this owner's short-sightedness, and no guarantee of the team coming back if. If they can't get a deal done in Phoenix area, Arizona Coyotes comes back. So we'll see. So that's Arizona musings from me. Let's move on to what you really want to hear about. I'll talk Dodgers first before we get into Lakers Kings playoffs here and Clippers, I guess. So the Dodgers are currently 12-10. That's a far cry from where they were after the first 2 weeks of Major League Baseball, or I believe as of their last two series, they were like 11-5. They're still in first place in the West, but it's looked a little hairy here. They haven't quite gotten the pitching that they've needed from Yoshinobu Yamamoto, their other big signing of the offseason. They signed him for $325 million, the biggest signing, I believe, of a player coming from Japan, even bigger than when Ohtani first signed to pitch, and he hasn't quite caught up to, or I should say, Major League Baseball has caught up to him quite easily. Last night, he was only able to go 5 innings. I think he's only gone past 5 innings once, and he gave up 4 runs, and he's not looked good. Put the team in a 4-0 hole almost immediately. And the Dodgers have had a hard time. They lost their last series to the Nationals, 2 out of 3. They lost the series before that to the Padres. So they're in trouble. They lost last night to the Mets, 9-4. They're in trouble of losing their three straight series at home on a homestand for the first time since 2011, when they weren't winning, thanks to the Guggenheim Group. So it's, partly the fact that their top four have been the only consistent part of their lineup, so struggled to score runs lately. The back end of their bullpen is terrible. That's what happened last night. The Dodgers were able to come back after being down 4-0 to tie it 4-4, and then the bullpen just blew the game, giving up the next 5 runs to the Mets while the Dodgers did nothing on offense. So, baseball's a marathon. It's only April, but it's been tough to watch. There's a lot of expectations with the team, for all the money that they spent, and they are not living up to the expectations of the Dodger fans. Now, I said, when I first talked about the beginning of the season that it really didn't matter what they did in the regular season, so long as they got into the postseason and then that's what really matters, because we've seen this team win 100 games last year with a bunch of injuries, having to use young pitchers to round out a starting staff, things like that, and still win 100 games, but yet disappoint in the postseason. So there is the regular season expectations not being there, just, you know, wanting to get through it and see what we can do in October. Is this team built for October? Well, if you're looking at April, no, it doesn't look like that. You can't have four great hitters at the top of the lineup and it not come to anything, because the back end of the lineup is so terrible. I think the Dodgers 7-9 hitters, it keeps getting worse. They're like in the lower tier of every statistics you can think of on offense. And when I say lower tier, I'm talking about 27 and below, in a league with 30 clubs where there's seven through nine hitters are just not doing anything. And in baseball, it's a team sport. You need everybody, in order to win a championship. You need everybody to be successful. You can't have, after the sixth batter, just a big hole. And a lot of it is on players that have been here with the Dodgers. Chris Taylor, who signed free agent extension a couple years ago, which was team friendly. Doesn't feel very team friendly these days because it's just so, he's been terrible. I mean, he's had one hit, I believe, all season, and strikeouts is like a 2-3-1 ratio in terms of walks. There's guys like Kike Hernandez, who they brought back because they wanted some veteran on the team and you know, some pop, and he's known for a clutch time in the postseason. He's been terrible. I think he's only hitting 176. Gavin Lux has not looked good since coming back after a year-long injury last year. He's certainly not hitting. He's not as bad defensively as he was in spring training, but at the moment, it's where he's hurting him is with his bat. So that's part of the problem. The bullpen, oh yeah, it's just been terrible. Back end is terrible. Other than Evan Phillips, it doesn't seem like the Dodgers have anybody who can sort of get to Evan Phillips and either keep the games close or, you know, protect the lead. But again, it's April. Last year they had a terrible bullpen and ended up picking itself up and being one of the better bullpens by the end of the season. And then there's the starters. Bobby Miller is already on the shelf because of a bad shoulder. Walker Buehler has struggled in his AAA assignments to rehab from injury from last year. Tyler Glasnow had his first loss this week, where he didn't look good. You know, there's just, and he was a big trade that they made. It's just been a tough early part of the season. Not giving out hope, as I tell everybody and anybody about the Dodgers, you only need 88 wins to get into the postseason, and then it's whoever's ball game, right? So we'll see. I think as long as Ohtani, Freeman, Will Smith, and Mookie Betts, who continues to play like he's MVP of the league, continue to do well, there's always a chance, because that's one part. But certainly the Dodgers need a lot of help when it comes to starting staff and the bullpen. And hopefully they turn things around in May as April ends here. But we'll see. Again, you only need 80... Really, you only need 88 wins, in my opinion. That's a guaranteed spot. Doesn't matter where you are. 88 wins will get you into the postseason. Then just go from there. Okay, moving on to... I'm going to go with Kings. We'll leave the Lakers for last. I'm going to go with Kings. The Kings made it to the postseason. I said they would. They had a pretty good chance. The only thing that was up in the air was whether they would go in as a wild card team and face one of the top two teams in the Western Conference, or if they would go in as a third place team in their division and face the Edmonton Oilers again. Well, there was some drama on the last night of the season. The Kings were playing the second worst team, the Chicago Blackhawks, whereas the Vegas Knights were playing the Anaheim Ducks. If Vegas won, they would face the Oilers. They would end up third in the Pacific, face the Oilers, and the Kings would have to face Dallas as the last team to get in, facing the top team in the conference. Well, the Kings, somehow the Ducks beat the Knights, and somehow the Kings were losing to Chicago, They only needed 1 point, so a tie or a loss in overtime would have been fine. I mean, excuse me, a loss in overtime would have done it. But they were losing late, and somehow they were able to tie the game. After they emptied out their net, they were able to tie the game and tie it at 4-4. They go into overtime, and literally, puck drops in overtime. Kings forward Adrian Kempe took it straight to the goalie and scored, tying the record for the fastest overtime goal from the start of the overtime period in NHL history. 6 seconds. Kings jumped the Vegas Golden Knights, who are the defending Stanley Cup champions, and they're facing the Edmonton Oilers for the third year in a row. Even if you don't follow hockey, I would think that you would know somebody. The Oilers have Connor McDavid. He's one of the faces of the franchise and the league. And the Kings are trying to beat them for the first time since 1989 in a playoff series. It just doesn't look good. The Oilers have the best record in the NHL over the last 69 games. What happened to those other games? They were one of the worst teams, but somehow fired their coach and turned into one of the best teams. I can't remember the last time the Kings beat them. I think the Kings beat them early. So the Kings got that coach fired, and then eventually had to fire their own coach. So it's two coaches who hopped onto this team's in their middle of their seasons. And the Kings, I just don't see them winning. They've looked mediocre even as of recently. Yeah, they kind of popped in here. They've won quite a few games here at the end to put themselves in a position where they would remain in the playoff spot, but they're just facing a team that I don't think they can beat. There's too much firepower. It's not only just Connor McDavid, that's is his line mate Leon Draisaitl, also who's also won an MVP before. Connor McDavid's won three. There's Evander Kane, who would beat up on the Kings when he was a Shark, and now is has a chance to end their postseason again. He's had a lot of success against the Kings in the postseason in the last 2 years. It's hard for me to see a route for the Kings, and frankly, Kings fans are not happy with what happened with this team, especially with so many expectations. The development doesn't seem to have, picking second or having a top five pick in the draft for during the rebuilding time and not seemingly having developed enough guys to be a consideration for one of the top teams in the league, starting out so strong last season, I mean this season, where they even set a record for the most road wins to begin a season. I think they won 11 straight road wins to begin the season. Really looked like they were going to be one of the better teams in the West, or certainly in the Pacific, and it just didn't happen. They've had some lulls. Other teams have passed them in their own division. It's hard for me to see them beating a team with that much firepower. But it's hockey. All you need is your goalie to stand on his head. But third straight year in a row, where they don't have a home advantage against a team that they lost in 2022 in 7 games, and in 2023 in 6 games. Both series were close. You can give the Kings credit. They were up 3-2 in the 2022 series before losing at home and then losing a game 7 on the road. Last year they were down, they were up 2-1 in the series, and they had a 3-0 first period lead in game 4 with a chance to go up 3-1 in the series. They blew that and then managed to go and then managed to lose the next 2 games, ending their season. And putting, and in my opinion, putting the fire, or making Todd McClellan, their former coach, basically start the season in the hot seat, so that when everything went bad, they had to pull the trigger and fire him, like they did. I don't know if interim coach Jim Hiller is really the guy that's going to lead them past the Oilers for whatever reason, but here are a few positives. The Kings are healthy. Last year they had some injuries going into the series. And probably why they didn't look as good as they did the year before. This year, everyone's healthy, and it starts 0-0. But my prediction is probably another 6-game loss. I just think that the Edmonton Oilers have too much firepower That the Kings just don't. And in hockey, yes, you need a goalie who can stand on their head in the postseason, but you also need guys who can score goals. And this team, the Kings, play a system that's much slower. They try to slow things down and then get an advantage on teams. And if they don't score goals, then they have a tough time. And even if they manage to slow down the Oilers a little bit, I just think that the Oilers have enough to get past the Kings again. So that's my prediction. Kings lose another series in six. And then now you got to talk about whether it's Rob Blake, the general manager's gonna need to look in the want ads for a new job, because he did a good job, seemingly, of turning things around. Good rebuild, willing to take the lumps, get some good prospects, but they haven't really panned out. There hasn't really been a guy that's come out of their drafts that you could say this is the leader of the next generation of LA Kings hockey, and he's going to lead us to good things, glory. There really isn't anybody who's popped out from that. And guys that they let go of or moved on from, like Jonathan Quick, is, he's part of the success for the Rangers this year, who had the best record in all of hockey. One of the things the Kings struggle with at times is their goaltending, and there was a guy that they had, and they let him go last year, and he's sort of revitalized his career. It's just they didn't do anything at the trade deadline to sort of turn things around and make them better. So we'll see. It is playoff hockey. It is playoff hockey. We'll see. But let's move on from that. We'll see. The Ducks season ended. They'll be picking in the lottery again. We'll see how they're. I think it's the fifth straight year that they missed a postseason, which is the most they have in franchise history. So we'll see how much longer their two fans can handle that kind of mediocrity before they start asking some hard questions that nobody will answer, because it's hockey and Anaheim doesn't get more niche than that. So let's move on to the Lakers. Okay, that's the big story. So the Lakers, third year in a row, they're in the play-in. This year they were the eighth seed, so they did not have home court advantage. They needed to beat New Orleans on the road on the last day of the season. They were able to do that just to get New Orleans again for their play-in game last Tuesday. I'm recording this on Saturday morning, the day before their first postseason, or the day of their first postseason game. So the Lakers were able to do that. It was a weird playing game. The Lakers blew out New Orleans in the last game of the season to get into the playing game. They get into the playing game. The best player is D'Angelo Russell. LeBron and AD look like they're having a tough time. Very slow. AD had hurt his back in the final season win against New Orleans, and so he was much slower. Looked like he was struggling a bit with his back, but yet the Lakers, thanks to some really good defense, went up by 18 points and looked like they were running away with it, meaning they would capture the seventh seed and then face the Nuggets in the first round. And then, as has happened this year in with the Lakers, once they build a big lead, they seem to fall off. They start doing things that they're not supposed to be doing. Start to play dumb basketball. And I would say probably got a little tired. They had been on the road for quite a few games. And so they blew the 18-point lead. Zion Williamson was torching them. There was nothing they could do about him. And then he had a hamstring injury that pulled him out from the last like 3 minutes, and the Kings were able to pull away. I mean, the Lakers were able to pull away. Big shot by D'Angelo Russell, who was, like I said, best player in the game, scored. I think there was a minute left. The Lakers were up by one and hit this big three-pointer, put them up by four, and they never really relinquished that lead. It came down to free throws. They hit all their free throws and they won, guaranteeing them some time off. They didn't have to play, because had they lost, they would have hosted the number. I think they would have hosted the Sacramento Kings in the next game, because the Kings eliminated the Warriors in their play-in game. So that set up the matchup against the Denver Nuggets, and so here we go. The Lakers have not beaten the Denver Nuggets since December of 2022. That's regular season or postseason. Obviously, the most, so they're 0-8 against them since December 2022. Obviously, the one everybody cares about was last year in the Western Conference Final, where the Lakers were swept by the Denver Nuggets, who went on to win the NBA title. The Nuggets this year, in a really strong Western Conference, ended up getting the number two seed. And so there's a lot of talk, and of course, because of the Wednesday to Saturday, there's a lot of time, but there's a lot of talk on one, should the Lakers have avoided the Nuggets and gone the route of playing another play-in game, one they would have hosted, and then try to beat the number one seed, I'm sorry, the number one seed Oklahoma. Yeah, I think it's Oklahoma. Yeah, the Thunder, who outdistanced the Nuggets and the Timberwolves to get the number one seed. Should they have tried to do that because they don't have as much playoff experience? The Nuggets are the defending champions. The Nuggets have beaten the Lakers eight straight, like you said, regular season and postseason. And also, the Lakers had success against Oklahoma this year. Well, and then that's where the talk started, and then of course the sports talk went to, well, this, you don't want to do that. You don't want to, A, lose games on purpose because you don't know what can happen. Had they, lost to the Pelicans, especially in the way that they did it, they blew an 18-point lead, and then tried to pull themselves up and win another must-win game against Sacramento. You don't know how that could have gone, even though Sacramento did get blown out by the Pelicans without Zion Williamson yesterday, ending their season. You didn't want, the talk was you didn't want to do that and play chance and then just try to get yourself into this seemingly better series. It doesn't really work like that. There's a hidden sports karma that doesn't let you do that. So it's the Lakers and the Nuggets. And now the talk is, well, the Lakers want the Nuggets. They want revenge for last year. They know how to beat the Nuggets, although I don't know what proof anyone is gleaning that from, because, like I said, they haven't beaten them. They have not beaten them since December 2022. Their last two games, the Lakers had a 3-point lead with 4:52 to go, and lost by 10. And then in this game before that, they were, and I believe both of these were at home, by the way. And the game before that the Lakers played the Nuggets, they were tied with 3 minutes 44 seconds left in the fourth quarter and lost by eight. So I just think that there's just no way. I'd be surprised if the Lakers actually won a game, and I'm not saying that because I'm just down on them. It's just you need a coach who knows what the heck they're doing, and I have no faith that Darvin Ham knows what he's doing with this team. Last year, D'Angelo Russell was unplayable against the Nuggets. I believe he only averaged 6 points in the series, and a lot of times they couldn't play him. Even though the series was close, I think that's part of the reason that they lost. It's like they just didn't have anybody else who could affect the game. Now, mind you, this was a Western Conference Final, so Anthony Davis had some good games against Jokic on the offensive side. He was terrible against him on defense. I think Jokic earned a triple double for the series, and just hit some ridiculous shots that there was nothing that Davis could do to affect him, even though he had been the best defensive player in the playoffs up to that point. And there was really no other scoring punch from the Lakers. LeBron James ran out of gas. I think he scored 40 points in the game four loss, but like he only scored 4 points in the second half of that game. Austin Reeves had some good games, but really wasn't, there was no punch there when they really needed him. And guys like Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr. just torched them all series. And I don't see how that can change in the series. I really don't. I mean, the matchups are still just as bad. The Nuggets, I think the only player they lost last year was, I think it was Brent Brown, who went to the Pacers via free agency. Other than that, their role players are just better than the Lakers' role players. They are. Spencer Dinwiddie's not going to do anything against the Nuggets. He's certainly not going to be able to help on defense. Even if D'Angelo Russell scores, which I think he's going to struggle with. And one of the reasons he struggled with last year is because of the Nuggets' size. They're an athletic team, and that's the kind of team that D'Angelo Russell struggles against, even if he does better than 6 points, which I think is possible. He's been one of their most improved players in these last 25 games, and certainly been an asset to helping the Lakers go 11 of their last final 14 games to get into the play-in. He's done a great job of that, but I think he'll struggle again, and he's no matchup against Jamal Murray. The only way I think it'll be a close series, if something happens, and I'm not rooting for this, but if something happens, Jamal Murray picks up an injury, Jokic picks up an injury, something that slows them down, or even somebody like Michael Porter Jr., who I don't think is that important, but is within the Nugget system, is an important piece, or KCP, one of these guys that they really rely on to be a role player, struggles, somehow, maybe the Lakers have a chance, but I don't think it's a chance to win the series, it's just a chance to make it close. So my prediction for this series is, I think the Lakers lose in 5 games. I think the Lakers lose the first two. It's in Denver. They don't play well in Denver. They never have, especially in the playoffs, actually. Even though last year was the first time Denver beat the Lakers in a postseason series, the Lakers have had some close postseasons against Denver and struggled on the road against them. I just don't see the matchup being that good, and Darvin Ham isn't a good enough coach to make the right adjustments. And I don't even think Mike Malone is that good of a coach. He just happens to have one of the best players in the NBA on his team and a healthy Jamal Murray. So I don't think it's a coach thing. I think it's just more of a depth and talent thing. And the Lakers have shown, yes, they can beat anybody on any given day. I mean, they beat the Celtics and the Knicks without LeBron and AD in a point in this regular season. But if you're telling me a consistent team, they've beaten the Timberwolves. The only teams they didn't beat were Sacramento. I mean, they didn't even beat Sacramento. They got swept by the Sacramento Kings, and the Kings couldn't even get out of the play-in. They struggled against the Warriors, and the Warriors' season ended on the first night as a 10th seed. I mean, the teams that the Lakers struggled against, they won't see in this postseason, but the worst matchup was the Denver Nuggets, in my opinion. One other silver lining I would say is that it's early. Last year, of course, the Lakers kind of grinded out 2 6-game series before they had to play Denver, who was pretty fresh. Yeah, you can get them at the beginning, but, you know, the Nuggets aren't afraid of the Lakers. I'm not saying the Lakers are afraid of the Nuggets, but it's got to wear on you that you can't beat this team, no matter what you do. So, yeah, I say Nuggets in 5. By the time you guys hear this, depending on when it goes up, they might even already be down 2-0. And I think at that point, the Lakers win a game at home, but it won't do anything for the series. So Lakers lose. What does that mean for the postseason? I don't know. I know that Anthony Davis and LeBron are going to play in the Olympics. They were named to the Olympic team. Just seems stupid for LeBron James to be playing in the Olympics at his age. After playing so many games this year, I think he ended up playing 69 games, which means he'll still be eligible for awards like the All-NBA and stuff like that. Anthony Davis played his most games as a Laker, 76. Of course, his first season was interrupted by COVID. So, but still, the most regular season games, he was 76 this year. So I don't understand why they're going to play in the Olympics. Who gives a shit? That's what I say. I don't care if Team USA really needs them to win. I would much rather a bunch of young guys go to Paris and win the gold, because that's what's going to happen, than the two best players on a team who are older and might possibly come back next year. LeBron's status is up in the air, but Anthony Davis is still on the team. Why you would want to play in the Olympics after being able to get to so many regular season games this year? And only getting a 7th seed. I would think, you know, they'd be smarter about that, but I don't live their lives. They're adults. They can figure it out. I don't know I'm sure the team's not going to tell them not to play. But I don't know what that means for the summer. I hope it's not another summer where the Lakers are looking for a coach. I hope it's not another summer where they have to remake the team again just to chase another championship. You know, because the Warriors look like they're going to be breaking up, and I could easily see a scenario where The Lakers do something dumb, like the Russell Westbrook trade, and trade some of their contracts to get somebody like, I don't know, Draymond Green, or even something stupider like giving money, free agent money, to Klay Thompson, who looks like a shell of himself. Doesn't look like he ever recovered from his knee injury. So we'll see. I know it sounds like a downer, but we'll see. Funnier things have happened, but we got to live in reality. I don't think the Lakers are gonna make the run that they did last year out of the seventh seed again. A real quick, I don't know if anybody, whoever listens to this, is a Clipper fan, but they're in the postseason. They didn't have to play in a playing game. They are the fourth seed actually, so they actually get to host their first round game. And they'll be hosting the Mavericks again, something that feels like, wow, had they avoided that, avoided them, they would have, they should be more confident, but they're really having trouble here. At one point, they, it was like over 2 months, the Clippers were 26-5 during the first half of the season. They were number one seed in the West, and then the following 2 months, they played 500. They're getting Russell Westbrook back, who fractured his hand. But the concern, of course, is always health, right? Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are not guaranteed to be facing Dallas. That's the team they're facing, Dallas, in the first game. We'll see if Kawhi can get there. Dallas has beaten them before in the postseason. No, I'm sorry. The Clippers eliminated the Mavs in 2020 and 2021, beating Luka Doncic, but it's a completely different team. I don't know, it's long, athletic, young, defensive-minded teams that have given the Clippers fits, and Dallas doesn't fit that mold. But Dallas gets, they have Doncic, they have a healthy Kyrie Irving, so they picked up guys like PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, and they've looked really good since the trade deadline. So it could be an even series, and could certainly go seven games. A healthy Irving, though, kind of feels like it's gonna be the X factor in this series versus what Doncic had when he was going in alone against the Celtics, excuse me, the Clippers in 2020 and 2021. So we'll see. But I guess, oh, I guess I can give a prediction. I'm gonna say Dallas in seven. I'm gonna say Dallas in seven, especially if Kyrie's not playing the first game. That's a big blow. So we'll see. Yeah, a little niche news. LA Sparks had the second and fourth seed, and they were able to pick up two of the five best players in college basketball. So we'll see what their season looks like. I think I'm more looking forward to seeing how Caitlin Clark does in the WNBA. She was the number one pick. And yeah, so women's basketball on the up and up. Let me see, as I discussed in the last podcast. Oh, one other big news that I didn't talk about after I recorded the last podcast: Michael Cooper, former Laker legend, in my opinion, great, got elected to the NBA Hall of Fame, or excuse me, the Basketball Hall of Fame. But for his NBA career, Michael Cooper, I believe he was part of the first eight all-defensive teams, five times first team, and then three other times he was three other times he was part of the second and second team. One defensive player of the year, 1987. Other than Kareem and Magic Johnson, was the only other player to win part of the five NBA championship teams in the 80s. Had a successful coaching career in the WNBA, winning two titles with the LA Sparks, their first two titles in franchise history, and then one other Western Conference title. Coached at USC Women's as well. I don't think they had any postseason success there, but Quite a credit. A lot of people were criticizing the pick, saying that he never went to an All-Star game. Well, if you ask me, All-Star games are bullshit. It's some dumb fan ploy where fans get to vote for the starters. That doesn't make any sense. Coaches pick their favorite guys. But he was one of the best defenders of the 80s. The best compliment he ever got was the fact that Larry Bird said that the toughest guy who ever defended him in his career was Michael Cooper, and he said that in a press conference. And that's great praise from another great player. So I'm really happy that Michael Cooper, one, got into the Hall of Fame to represent the Lakers, for one, but also to represent the fact that credit him for being one of the better defenders. It's very rare that in the NBA, guys who are that good on defense get recognized. Unlike in other sports, in football, obviously, you can play all your career as a defender. And in baseball, guys like Ozzie Smith won or got into the Hall of Fame because of his glove. But in basketball, it's a lot of people focus on the points and the titles and All-Star games and All-NBA. But, yeah, there's two sides of the ball. You got to play defense. And it's pretty cool that Michael Cooper gets recognized. So that means, as per the Lakers policy, that Michael Cooper will get his number 21 raised to the rafters. Do yourself a favor, look up some Michael Cooper clips on YouTube. Not only was he a defender, but he's one of those guys who can fly in the air, surprisingly. There was the famous Koopa Loop. Magic would throw alley-oops to Cooper. And then there's also... I was trying to think. Oh, he was one of those first 3-point shot guys. He held the record for the most 3-pointers in the finals for many, many years, up until, I believe, the Curry era, where everybody's throwing up threes. But he hit, I believe, six or eight in the 1987 finals against the Celtics. And I think even as recent as, I don't know, I'm sure Curry broke the record, but he had 6 1/4, which was a lot, and it's funny. Nowadays, guys throw up 100 3-pointers in every game that it doesn't even get, it doesn't raise an eyebrow when you see that. But that was a much different NBA back then. Some teams didn't even shoot 6 3-pointers in a whole game, let alone 1/4. So congratulations to Michael Cooper for making the Basketball Hall of Fame. Much deserved. Can hardly wait next year till he gets his night when they raise his number to the rafters. So I think I'll leave it at that. Jake is probably wondering how I got 42 minutes squeezed into a solo podcast, and I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing my voice. So, Dodgers down, Lakers in the postseason, but probably won't go far. Kings in the postseason, probably won't go far. Very different summer, I think, for LA sports teams, at least the winter ones. Clippers, might be time to blow up that Kawhi Paul George pairing, especially since they're going into a new arena next year, their own for the first time since they played in San Diego. So we'll see. The next time you hear from me, we'll talk postseason results, I'm sure. And what the Rams and the Chargers did in the NFL draft, which is coming up this coming Thursday, April 25th. But enough from me. I'll sign off by, as I say always, on West Coast Bias. We're the best coast. We're the West Coast. We're West Coast Bias.